Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. It is my great privilege to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week former Congressman Paul Findley. He served as a Republican member of the United States House of Representatives from Illinois for 22 years. He was a key author of the War Powers Resolution and a leader in securing its enactment by overriding the veto of President Richard Nixon. The federal building in Springfield, Illinois is named for him. Congressman Findley, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I like the topic that your station seems dedicated to.
Well, I appreciate that. I thought I would first ask you briefly about some recently proposed and actual conflicts, and then we might discuss the background of how the laws came to be what they are and what Congress ought to be doing.
Okay.
So a new major war on Iraq, were it to be launched by President Obama, legal or illegal?
He has no authority whatever to make acts of war in Iraq. The war that lasted so long was brought to a close when all combat forces were taken away. And the fact that he has introduced 300 advisors, so-called, and maybe some heavy equipment and other troops with broader responsibility doesn't mean that the situation is altered as far as the Constitution is concerned. The Constitution was drafted by people who had had bad experience with war and bad experience with an executive, namely the King of England, who had the right to make war any time, any place he wanted to. And they sought to draw up a system of government which would make it very difficult for, if not impossible, for any one person, not even the president, to initiate a war without the full support of the American people by means of a declaration of war, which is tantamount to making war. That language stands today just exactly as it was written into the Constitution many years ago. But it has been neglected very seriously quite a number of times by presidents over the years. They hold the title of commander-in-chief under the Constitution, but they cannot command acts of war without the express approval of the Congress. That's a restriction that irritates some of them quite a bit, and some have seen fit to violate it quite strongly, namely Lyndon B. Johnson in Vietnam.
And what about the actual act of sending hundreds of armed troops, albeit labeled advisors, into Iraq, as Eisenhower did in Vietnam? President Obama notified the Congress and said that notification was consistent with the War Powers Resolution, but he said those troops would be remaining as long as he wanted, which sounds to me inconsistent with the War Powers Resolution.
Well, I have not seen a document that he sent to either House of Congress explaining why he was sending forces to Baghdad at this time. So I don't know how it's worded. There is no way he can undertake acts of war. That's the important thing without authority. The trouble is pretext can easily be arranged to create a sudden emergency that can be called sufficient by the president to act beyond the Constitution. In other words, to defend property, to defend American lives. Several presidents have tried to make that even more broad. So there's always the risk of acts of war, and once the first act of war occurs, it's so difficult to ever bring the conflict to an end.
Well, I've seen what the president sent to Congress. It's on the White House website, and it says that he's sending troops for as long as they're needed, as long as he wants them there. But he says he's notifying Congress of this act consistent with, which is sort of White House language, I take it, for in compliance with, the War Powers Resolution. Am I right that the War Powers Resolution actually gives him 60 days, not as long as he wants to engage in
no,
such a...
No, it does not give him one single day to act without proper circumstances. That is a misreading of the War Powers Resolution. The 60 to 90 day provision in the War Powers Resolution had nothing to do with a president initiating action. It had everything to do with restricting action that he might take, claiming that the circumstances are so urgent that he could not await an action of Congress before proceeding. That language has been often misinterpreted. I recall hearing the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee asserting that the president had leeway of 60 to 90 days under the War Powers Resolution, and he simply hadn't read the resolution itself, because those time limits are not there to permit the president to undertake military action. They are there in case he sets forth on military action without express approval of Congress and in violation of the Constitution. Frankly, I didn't recommend putting the 60 to 90 day period referenced in the resolution. I would have eliminated that language because it is so confusing.
Well, yeah, you can understand why even people who have read that law interpret it that way, because it says the president must consult with Congress, and then he must he has this 60 day to 90 day limit, and then during those 60 days, it discusses congressional drawing up and possible passage of a resolution for extended warfare. It does lend itself pretty easily to that interpretation, I think.
Well, it's only if the reader does not read the preceding section, which limits it very precisely and completely to action that he takes beyond the authority of the Constitution.
Which he should not be doing at all, I would think.
That's right. That's right. But if he undertakes it, Congress also has the authority to order the president to cease military action by concurrent resolution if it deems to do that. That's a provision I put in the resolution, but it's never been utilized up to the present time. It may be in the future. In other words, if Congress feels that military action that is underway should be terminated, it has the authority to tell the president to stop.
I think you took a strong position back in September on the proposal to send missiles striking into Syria. Would that have violated the Constitution and or the War Powers Resolution?
Yes, it would, because the framers of the Constitution, I have a friend who's quite a legal historian, and he said that they did not enumerate the times when a president would automatically have the right to use war powers. For example, if we're under attack, if our territory is under attack, or there is reason to believe that it's about to be attacked, if U.S. lives are threatened in a certain place in the world, he has the right, the implied right, to go immediately to use whatever force is necessary to rescue them from danger. So the president is not without backup emergency authority. It isn't that really amounts to a problem. Let's go back to the beginning of Vietnam. I believe Jack Kennedy sent an initial group of 2,000 advisors to Vietnam. As soon as Lyndon Johnson was president, he began to increase the number of advisors there, and he converted quite a bunch of them into an operating combat unit. And then he added more and more troops without any additional authority whatever from Congress. And before we knew it, there were 500,000 people under arms fighting a war in Vietnam. It was one of the most desolate, disturbing experiences for the American people in many, many years. And I was in Congress from the very beginning of the war to the very end when we saw the last remnants being airlifted by helicopter from a tall building in what we call Saigon at that time. And that war was never properly authorized by Congress. But Congress did nothing about it, the absence of authority. And I must admit that I was a member of the House, and I should have been doing more than I did, although I tried a number of initiatives to try to cause the Congress to face up to the question of war. And I got quite a bit of support, but not nearly enough support to get a majority vote. So once the flags are flying and the guns are firing away, it's pretty hard to get the Congress to do much except support the troops in the field. The decision to make war has been made by the president, despite his reference to the Tonkin Gulf resolution, which he carried a copy of that resolution in his pocket. And occasionally when someone would question his authority to make war there, he would cite the Tonkin Gulf resolution. But there is no language in the Tonkin Gulf resolution which constituted a declaration of war or anything approaching that declaration. So it was an unauthorized war that led to over 50,000 war dead for the U.S.
We are speaking with former Congressman Paul Findley of Illinois. I would not omit the 4 million Vietnamese killed in that war. I think if Americans understood that these were one-sided slaughters and the scale of the slaughters, they might manage more opposition. I don't think we give them enough credit because we don't let them know. But I wonder whether the Constitution and the War Powers Resolution aren't intended, in both cases, to encompass all military actions, or whether there's some line that's crossed so that sending arms and trainers into Syria and sending advisors into Iraq and sending advisors into Vietnam up to a certain point is not yet an act of war, in which case, you know, I wonder at what point it becomes an act of war.
Well, with the Congress has to rely on the written reports that the War Powers Resolution requires, and those reports are supposed to indicate the size of the forces, U.S. forces sent to a war zone that because of the circumstances are apt to become involved in war, the duration that our forces will probably be there, and the exact identification of the forces now there, and any increase that this action would involve in the inventory of such forces. So it does require quite a bit of information, and it's supposed to be supplied within 48 hours of the president's decision to move the forces. Now, that is not always met as it should be. In fact, about a year ago, I tried to keep a close tab on compliance with the War Powers Resolution, and I found that the instances in which the president, that was namely George W. Bush, was moving military forces around the world was so frequent, the written reports on those movements became so voluminous that they were bundled and not delivered properly to either the House or Senate. One of the problems in war powers control is that it requires a great degree of commitment and vigilance on the part of the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate. If they don't pay close attention to what is reported, then the War Powers Resolution is of almost no value. If they do pay close attention, they can keep the President's feet to the fire, so to speak, in a very timely fashion so that they can respond if they disagree with what he's doing. Otherwise, they just go with the flow of American passions supporting the troops.
When President Obama's lawyer, Harold Coe, testified in Congress about attacking Libya 3 years ago, he testified that it was not an act of war and it was not even hostilities, which led to various jokes about friendly bombs rather than hostile bombs. But he seemed to be interpreting the introduction of troops, the language in the War Powers Resolution, as meaning ground troops, so that as long as the troops were in airplanes, or I imagine if there were no troops at all because the airplanes were robotic and we were using drones and missiles, then the White House's view is that wars are no longer wars or even actions to which the War Powers Resolution might apply.
That's a wrongful interpretation. It's not limited to boots on the ground. It's limited to bombs that are dropped and aircraft that flown over the area. Of course, when the War Powers Resolution was passed, drones were unknown, so that was not stipulated.
And what about...
But it's a dangerous world we live in, and the President of the United States has his fingertips on instruments of enormous power, including nuclear weapons. We place such confidence in him in the absence of anything like the War Powers Resolution that they were almost certain to get into deep trouble. Abraham Lincoln, when he was a member of the House of Representatives, said some very, very eloquent words about war powers. He said, if you let one man, namely the President, decide to go to war in Canada, for example, if the rest of the country could disagree with his position, but if he had the right to go to war on his own initiative, he could ignore the public opinion, the opinion of Congress, and go ahead with the war. And that's why they stipulated that the decision to declare war, which is the equivalent of making war, does not involve the President at all. It's only the Congress that can, with authority, make a decision to go to war. The President doesn't even have to sign the bill.
Well, what do you make of interpretations of the authorization for the use of military force from 2001, taken by many to have given the President a blank check, allowing him to start wars, at least if he can pretend some tangential connection to the attacks of 9/11?
It was very loose language in the resolution. It was a mistake, but I think any fair-minded person would see that it was beyond the scope that Congress should have expressed in law. It just didn't make common sense. But that language was passed, and I think that he was encouraged by the Vice President to go ahead with an expansive interpretation of war powers. So, and that has risen to haunt us, I feel.
So were the attacks on Afghanistan and Iraq legal?
The attack... There's been no attack that I know of so far in Iraq.
No, the 2003 invasion.
We are building up war power, war instruments capable of acts of war in Baghdad, beyond what makes sense. And I think if I were in Congress, I'd be sounding the alarm every day.
I mean to refer to the 2001 U.S. invasion of Afghanistan and the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq. Were those legal actions?
Well, they were. Yes, they were. I think they gave the president the authority to make war. Not that it was a wise decision, but the Congress did take part in that. And although the phrasing could have been a little tighter, it gave him leeway to act.
And does not Article 6 of the Constitution make treaties the supreme law of the land, and is not the UN Charter such a treaty? And did not those invasions blatantly violate the UN Charter?
Well, my view is that the treaty is the law of the land, but it's not the law that is superior to the Constitution.
True. Okay.
The NATO treaty, for example, gave some assurance to other NATO members that in the event that if one is attacked, that meant automatically that the whole alliance was under attack. But that did not authorize war by the United States, even though the NATO treaty was written mainly by the U.S. government. There would still need to be an action by Congress under the Constitution to authorize action through NATO.
So why would the United States join a treaty like the UN Charter or the long-forgotten Kellogg-Briand Pact forbidding war if it's going to maintain the right to make war?
Well, because the Constitution, I think, wisely provided that only an instrument signed by Congress can authorize war under any circumstance, whether it be an alliance or not.
Do you think that the War Powers Resolution has prevented wars? I mean, certainly stopping those missile strikes into Syria back in September was quite an accomplishment. But do you think over the past few decades that sort of resistance from Congress in 1973 has made a difference?
Well, I'm not an historian, but I believe that the presidents have uniformly questioned the constitutionality of the War Powers Resolution, but they have also, with very few exceptions, complied with the terms of the resolution. And I think that represents quite a gain that needs to be protected and kept in place in the future.
And yet we continue to have war after war after war.
Yes, we do. That's very disheartening, and that makes it all the more important that Congress be vigilant about the enforcement of the War Powers Resolution and the constitutional provision that gives Congress alone the right to make war. If our Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate are not vigilant in their attention to the War Powers Resolution reports, then we have been really shortchanged in the ability of the American people to avoid war. Lincoln described war as the worst burden that can be placed upon a people, and I agree with that statement. And he went to great lengths when he was a member of Congress to complain about the constitutionality of the attack that the U.S. had made against Mexico without the authority of the Congress.
Yes.
He's been quite a model to me all through the years.
Let me ask one more sort of devil's advocate question, because the Constitution did have one provision in it that might have been used much more often than it has been, namely that of impeachment. And when there was a push to impeach President Nixon, you introduced a resolution for censure instead as an alternative to impeachment. But in retrospect, if President Nixon had been impeached, and if he had been impeached for the crime of launching wars, not to mention preventing the ending of wars, wouldn't that have sent a message to his successors?
Well, it could be. That was another very, very difficult period in history that I saw firsthand. I knew that Nixon had served his country very well in foreign policy, had a lot of good middle-of-the-road proposals in domestic policy. I supported him as president. And while I recognized the gravity of his bad conduct in respect to the FBI and CIA, I thought he still had the potential for some good deeds to the remainder of his term, and I thought that if the act of censure could be substituted for impeachment, that he would surely have learned his lesson and behaved properly and been able to serve the country during the next 2 years. That was my rationale. But when he openly admitted that he used the CIA and the FBI for partisan political purposes, that was the smoking gun that could not be ignored.
But massive secret bombings of foreign nations ought to have reached that level as well, I would think.
That's right. His incursion into Cambodia.
Is that not impeachable? That seems impeachable.
Yes, that was impeachable. Absolutely, but so far as I know, no one introduced a resolution in respect to that precisely. I may be flawed in my memory, but...
No, it was introduced, it just wasn't passed by the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah. I'm sure you're right.
Well, it is refreshing to hear the voice of a former congressman considering the rule of law quite seriously. It's been our privilege to have former Congressman Paul Findley with us on Talk Nation Radio. Congressman, thank you very much for taking the time.
Well, it's a pleasure for me. I enjoyed it, and I seem a little bit rusty because I've hit the age of 93.
I hope you hit a lot more of those markers in the years to come. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.